All right. Excuse me. So, Genesis chapter 21. And we are dealing now with the birth of Isaac. And I think we just got started with that on last week. Let's quickly just get those verses before us again. Genesis 21. And the first seven verses make up the first section, the birth of Isaac. The Lord visited Sarah, and he said, he had said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he had promised. And Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore him, Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh over me. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. So, we just got started last week, and we were looking, if you remember, at the birth of Isaac, and as you think about some of these things, let me. That seemed like that's out of place. All right, I must have removed some of the points. We were looking at the faithfulness of God's word is what we closed. If you remember, looking at, there's one more thing I wanted to look at along those lines. There's a passage that I think I've read with you several times, Joshua chapter 21. Let's go over there. As you turn over there, the passage we were observing was 2 Corinthians chapter 1. And you remember where Paul says, my yeas are yeas, my nays are nays. And he was really calling upon God as a witness of that, being the highest one you could ever call to compare yourself to. And he, of course, was being accused of being wishy-washy, and because he changed his mind of visiting them, his enemies were saying, oh, Paul's never, he never does what he says he's going to do, and, you know, that sort of thing. And they were just attacking him. And so he, to deny that, he calls upon God, whose yeas are yeas and nays are nays. And so the point of it is, that is the nature of God. He does not lie. Everything he says is true. He keeps all of his promises. He's faithful to his word. And we see that in with regard to Isaac. He was born right when God told Abraham and Sarah that he would be. He told them a year before this, remember, that next year at this time, I will visit Sarah. And he did it, because that's just who God is. And you can trust his word. And a passage that really brings that out, I want to read this because there's a point I want to make about it. Joshua chapter 21, and at verse 43, says, and the Lord gave to Israel all the land that he swore to give to their fathers, and they took possession of it, and they settled there. And the Lord gave them rest on every side, just as he had sworn to their fathers. Not one of all their enemies had withstood them, for the Lord had given all their enemies into their hands. Not one word of all the good promises that the Lord had made to the house of Israel had failed. All came to pass. And so God gave them the land that he promised. We have talked a lot about the land because it's a part of the Abrahamic covenant and promise that God gave to him. But God gave them the land just as he had promised. And so he keeps his word. And we need to know that's true no matter what. God always keeps his word. And it's not just the positive aspects of his word that he would keep. Turn over to chapter 23 of Joshua. And we have the same thing being repeated. But notice what's added here. Joshua 23 and at verse 14. It says, and now I am about to go the way of all the earth. And you know in your hearts and souls, all of you, that not one word has failed of all the good things that the Lord your God promised concerning you. All have come to pass for you. Not one of them has failed. But just as, now watch this, but just as all the good things that the Lord your God promised concerning you, you have been fulfilled, has been fulfilled for you. So the Lord will bring upon you all the evil things until he has destroyed you from off the good land that the Lord your God has given you. So God kept his word. Now, you need to understand that this land promise was conditional. And there's a lot of people who fail to understand that. Moses is very clear about that, that they would be able to hold on to this land as long as they were faithful. If they went off and served other gods, then he would remove them from the land, which, as we know, eventually transpired just like that. But the words here, notice, it's said that he's kept all his words, and he will keep the evil words that he has spoken. And that just means evil from our standpoint, not that God spoke any evil words, but you know what it means there. He would remove them just like he said he would. And what we need to get from that is, it's wonderful to sit back and say, you know, I serve a God who keeps his promises. That's wonderful. And it is wonderful. All the great promises of the Bible that work out in our favor, we know God is going to keep. But what if you're unfaithful? You think somehow God is going to not keep his word when he talks about those who obey not the gospel will be lost, will be punished with an everlasting destruction. You think he's not going to do that? He's going to keep his word, good or bad or in between. He's going to do all that he promises to do because that's just who he is. The Hebrew writer said it's impossible for God to lie. And so he is going to keep his word, the good and the bad. And so we better make sure that we're walking the way he wants us to. Yes, Laura. Right. That's exactly right. Yeah, very good. I mean, we have to do our part. And it's not an earning part. We're not talking about meritorious works, earning our way to heaven or anything like that. But we have to obey. And that is so clear in the Bible, it's amazing to me that anyone would ever even doubt that. Over and over and over, we're told that we have to obey God. And why would we ever think in any other way when we think about who God is? An all-powerful being who created us. And obviously, he demands our obedience. And so he says, you go back, we're not doing it now, but you read places like Deuteronomy chapter 30, how strong the language is that Moses gave to the Israelites. Here's your choices, life and death. You choose. And just as sure as we're thinking about this, how God kept his promise with Abraham and Sarah here, the same thing, as I said a while ago, same thing happened with Israel. They didn't keep his word. They went after other gods, and he removed them from the land. But he's a gracious God, isn't he? So what did he do? What did he do next with Israel? What happened after 70 years? He gave them the land back. He let them go. He arranged for them to be set free. And so God is a gracious God. There's no doubt about that. And we should appreciate that. But Paul in Romans 2, when talking about the righteous judgment of God, he made sure that we understand, let's not take the love, the righteousness of God for granted. Let's make sure that we're living. Because if we die and we're not living the way we ought to be living, we'll pay the price. Yeah, but I just believe God is love. And on the day of judgment, he's not changing his mind. When you stand before God, you're going to be judged according to the things you've done in your body. And now, you know, we have a gracious God. So now, while we're alive, if you sin, you can rectify that by repenting of your sin and starting to walk right. But if your life is not in order when Jesus comes back, it's too late. Forever. For all eternity. There are no second chances after death. We have plenty of second chances now. Because that's the grace of God. But once you die, there are no more chances. So, and listen, again, God, I've said it many times, God doesn't demand that we do the impossible. Again, we're not earning our way to heaven. He just wants you to walk in obedience. He's given simple instructions for us to follow. And when you do stumble, repent. Ask God for forgiveness. He's gracious enough to forgive you. But we have to live the way he wants us to live. Go ahead, Sam.
Rich man has been in torment, broke church.
Right. No, that's right. That's right. 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 And a place of punishment in the Hadean realm. Yeah. Other Sam. Listen, that's right. It's just a matter of if you believe God's word or not. You have to take human emotions. When you start talking about things like eternal life and eternal death, you have to take human emotions away from it. Because God knows everything. He knows best. And his wisdom is far above ours. And so whatever God says is right, is good, it's right and good. Even if you think, I can sit back and say, you know, hell didn't make any sense. Hell's just not fair. Well, if God says it's fair, it's fair. Because he's on a higher plane than we are. We know God is love. And so, you know, whatever he has promised, again, he's going to do. Listen, hell is a real place. And real souls are going to be in that place. If you don't believe that, you may as well just put the Bible aside. You can't pick and choose what part of God's word you're going to believe. And there's as many passages on hell as there is on heaven. More passages on hell than that mention love. And so you have to take the whole thing. And so it's very important. And we see God, again, fulfills his word. All right. Another thing, as we think about in this text, it's clear the power of God. Moses obviously wanted to bring that out in Genesis chapter 21. Because he keeps mentioning the age of Abraham. And so you notice there at verse 2 that he had a son in his old age. And down at verse 5 it says, and Abraham was 100 years old. And again, verse 7, yet I have borne him a son in his old age, Sarah said. And so it's clear. Well, why is that important? Because obviously the birth of Isaac was miraculous. In fact, even when Paul, you remember, turn over to Romans chapter 4, when Paul was using this to make the various points he was making about faith in Romans 4, he brings up not just Abraham. In Genesis, we just read of Abraham. And Paul brings up both Abraham and Sarah. At verse 18, it says, and hope, he believed against hope, that is Abraham, that he should become the father of many nations, as he had been told, so shall your offspring be. He did not weaken in faith when he considered his own body, which was as good as dead, since he was about 100 years old, or when he considered the barrenness of Sarah's womb. So Abraham's 100 years old, past the age of childbearing and all of that. Sarah's been barren all of her life, and so she can't have children. And then along comes Isaac. Is it a miraculous birth? Of course it is. It just, again, demonstrates the greatness of God. He can do anything. Nothing is impossible with him. And it is quite the miracle when you stop and think about Isaac coming along at this late date. In the lives of Abraham and Sarah. And the God we serve today, is he any less great and strong and magnificent than he was in Abraham's day? The God you pray to, doesn't he have the same power as he has always had? Of course he does. And so we should be impressed. This is the God we serve. And he performed a great miracle. And of course all of this is a part of his plan to bring about the salvation of man. That is Isaac. And then a third thing, just quickly, with regard to the birth of Isaac, after he was born, we see Abraham's faithfulness once again. And one of the things I've often pointed out, it's a biblical principle, that if you're faithful in little things, then you'll probably be faithful in the larger things. That's the way God views it. There's a passage over in Luke chapter 16. And as you turn over there, the reason I'm bringing that up is Abraham demonstrates his faithfulness in Genesis 21 with the birth of Isaac. And the first way, it's in a little tiny way that you probably don't think about But again, that's just who Abraham was. He was faithful even in small things. Luke chapter 16. Someone read verse 10. Luke chapter 16 in verse 10. All right, very good. You see that first part? That he's faithful in a little, faithful in much. And that's the way God views it. And that God knows that's a fact. The only ones who don't realize that sometimes is us. Like we think, you know, boy, if I had $1 million, I sure would give a whole lot to the church. Really, what are you giving right now with the 100 that you have? If you're not giving right now with whatever you have, if you triple that income that you wouldn't give any more. You still give a little. Because if you're faithful in a little, unfaithful in a little, you'll probably be unfaithful in a lot. Whatever talent you have one talent. If you're not using that one talent, what would you do if God blessed you with three more? Same thing you're doing with the one that you're not using. It's just a biblical principle. And so when we look at Abraham, in chapter 22, we're going to see Abraham really at his best. And we're going to see him being faithful under a stressful situation there, keeping a very hard command. But even here, here's a little thing. Look back to Genesis chapter 21. It says, and Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him whom Sarah bore him, Isaac. Why did he call him Isaac? There's only one reason. Because God told him to. Like, you know, Sarah and Abraham didn't stay up late. They didn't buy a bunch of books and go through looking at names and things like that. They named Isaac because that's what God said. Now, remember what we had said in a previous study? And often when we're dealing with, especially the Old Testament, names at that time meant something. So they took that very seriously. And people say, oh, names don't mean anything. Well, then why did God change Abram's name to Abraham? Or Sarai's name to Sarah? They mean something to God. But at that time, but names always mean something. I think I told you, I said last time we talked about it, I said, my name's Don, doesn't mean anything. Well, of course, Fred looked it up, and it means a ruler of the world. World leader is what it means. I didn't even have any idea I was destined for that. There you have it. That's what my name means, according to Fred. But it really, we don't take that seriously, do we? But we do spend a lot of time naming our children. But in biblical times, that was very significant. In fact, a lot of times people would have nicknames or, you know, surnames that would be based on their character, like Barnabas and others. But they just took that more seriously. So like Abraham, you remember, God changed his name to Abraham. What did Abraham mean? Right, father of a multitude. Impressive. Sarah's name, princess. That means something. That means something. You know what Isaac means? He laughed. Laughter. And I understand in the context that it has a positive connotation to it. It can anyway. Sarah took it as a positive way. People will see my joy and that sort. But basically, that's what it means. Laugh. Like Abraham waited for 25 years to have a son, and you can see Abraham say, you know, can't we come up with a more robust name than that? For my son who is going to be the one of promise. And he got to give him a name that means laugh. And what did he do? What did he call him? Isaac. Little tiny thing, I know. Doesn't mean anything. But Abraham didn't give it, so far as we know, didn't give it any thought at all. Because God says, do this. And he did it. Now, that's going to mean a whole lot more in the next chapter when God calls upon him to do something great. But the point of it is, if you're not willing to do little things that God tells you to do, if he would have balked at the idea of Isaac being named a name that meant laugh and said, well, you know, maybe Isaac will be his nickname. This is what I'm going to call him. If he had that attitude, would that kind of attitude move him to say, okay, God, you want me to sacrifice my son, I'll do it. No. Little things. Just little things. And of course, the second thing in here was the fact that he circumcised Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old. And how did why did he do it? Because God had commanded him. And so as we study the life of Abraham, we're just getting the picture of what kind of man he was. And by the way, we have these things recorded so that we can learn from it. And we need to learn from it. We need to be just like Abraham. Obey God in little things or great things. Whatever. When God says to do something, do it. Because he's God. And that was the faith of Abraham. Remember Romans chapter 4? If we're going to be saved, we have to walk in the steps of that faith. And that means something. You have, God expect. Don't look at Abraham and say, but you know, he was so great. There's no way I can have a faith. You can have a faith just like Abraham. Why can't your faith be as strong as Abraham's faith? Was his faith miraculous? There wasn't anything miraculous about it. He just trusted God. And you can trust God, and I can trust God. God demands that we have the same kind of faith. And again, we'll highlight that even more when it comes down to the next chapter. All right, so you have the birth of Isaac, but then you have the belittling of Isaac beginning at verse 8. So let's read that. Genesis 21 verse 8 says, and the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. And of course, that was popular at that time, particularly because there it wasn't unusual for infants to die. They had a high rate of babies dying at that time. So you can see why they would celebrate. Usually it would be when the child was between 3 and 5, about that age. There wasn't any law there, and so it was all custom. And so, you know, they could do it whenever they wanted to. But just generally speaking, the child, whenever the child stopped nursing and things, then sometime after that, they, depending on the parents, they would have this celebration. Sometimes it would be very quickly. Sometimes it wouldn't be. Again, the child could be as old as 5 years old when they had this customary feast. And the only reason why that's important, it's not really important, but the reason it is with regard to this is because it gives us a little idea of how old Ishmael was. Like, you remember how old was Abraham when he was born? 86. And then when was Isaac born? How old was he? So how old did that make Ishmael? All right, so now you add some years to that, and we can't be sure how many, but probably 3 to 4 years. And so now you're talking about a Ishmael being a good, you know, he's at least 15 years old, probably 16 or 17. And now when you understand that, you can sort of understand what's developing here, beginning at verse 8. Again, it says verse 9, but Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, who she had borne to Abraham, laughing. Now, that's almost as mild as you can translate that. Not quite. Because the Hebrew word there can mean merry, to make merry. But that's not what this word means. It's being used here in a very sinister way. Ishmael's, he's not just out there with Isaac, who again is just 4 or 5 years old, and they're not just laughing, being merry, you know, having a good time. He's mocking Isaac cruelly. And can you imagine a teenage boy like that, you know, again, 16, maybe 17 years old, and he is in a very cruel way mocking Isaac. And the reason we know that is because by inspiration, Paul refers to it in Galatians chapter 4. Remember that? He uses it as an allegory. Turn over there to Galatians chapter 4. And notice, again, Paul's writing this by inspiration. So this is a divine interpretation of that. Verse 29 says this. Galatians 4 at verse 29. But just as at that time, he who was born according to the flesh... Who would that be? Ishmael. He was born according to the flesh. Now watch. Just as the one born according to the flesh persecuted him who was born according to the spirit, that would be Isaac, so also it is now. Of course, he's given an allegory. And so in this case, it would be those according to the flesh would be the Jews. And those according to the spirit would be the church, spiritual Israel. And the Jews were persecuting the church, so Paul's using all of this as an allegory. But he uses the word persecute. So that's what Ishmael was doing to Isaac. He was persecuting him. And scholars who know language there tell us that that is in the imperfect active tense that denotes an ongoing. It's not like this was just a one-time situation during a celebration. And it wasn't like it was playful. The way Paul uses the word persecution indicates that it was indeed a sinister kind of situation that came out of a scornful heart. Like Ishmael did not like Isaac, even as a baby. And if you stop to think about that, you know, it's not too hard to understand why. Again, Ishmael, when that's why I brought it up earlier and asked you, Ishmael was 14 years old when Isaac was born. So what kind of relationship did Ishmael have with Abraham? Huh? No. Abraham and Ishmael. They were close, weren't they? He was his only child. And we find out here, did Abraham care for Ishmael? Loved him. He was upset with what develops here. The apple of his eye, his only child, that's his boy. And you can imagine, you know, we have any only children here, one child. You know, you have it pretty good. Don't have to share the affection of dad with anybody. But now, after 14 years, Isaac comes along. And what do babies need? Attention. And this isn't any baby. This is a son that Abraham's been waiting for 25 years to come. A child by Sarah, his favorite. And now you can imagine that they had to take up some time with the baby, and Abraham probably showed a lot of affection, and 14-year-old Ishmael sitting back doing what? Kind of what young boys do. Not too happy. Not too happy. Then there's another element. Yeah, go ahead, Bart. Yeah, I mean, no. Yeah, we can't be sure about certain things, but one of the things when you study Abraham in all of these characters that we'll be looking at, these were human beings just like the rest of us who had hearts just like we have, emotions just like we have. And there's no question, you'll see in just a couple of minutes, that there is animosity between Hagar and Sarah. There's no doubt about that. And so, yeah, did Ishmael ever hear his mother say negative things about Sarah? And did that turn into having a certain attitude towards Isaac? Probably. I mean, I wouldn't stand up here and say that's the gospel truth about it, but I mean, they were human. And so probably. But there's another element, too. Ishmael, if Abraham didn't have any more children, didn't have any more sons, what would he get? Huh? The inheritance, right? The birthright. Well, that's just vanished.
When this boy comes along, he no longer has the inheritance. And so even at, you think when you're 14, 15, maybe even 16, 17, you know a little something about an inheritance? Oh, yeah. And so we can understand why there's animosity. So here they are. There's a celebration. And he is persecuting Isaac. He is mocking him in a very cruel way. And it no doubt is not, again, because of how Paul used the word in Galatians 4:29, it's not the first time, but this time Sarah sees it. And what is a mother going to do when she sees that? What would you do, mothers? You wouldn't be happy, would you? And Sarah's not at all happy. And so it says at verse 10, so she said to Abraham, cast out this slave woman with her son. For the son of this slave woman shall not be heir with my son Isaac. She's no longer my servant. Get rid of this slave woman. And she's mad, and because she has seen her son mistreated. And you have a way. Now, did she known, of course, we know that she didn't really treat Hagar in the best of ways. That may not have been true before the situation with Hagar and Abraham. But ever since Hagar conceived, and she began to despise her mistress, that relationship changed for good. What did Sarah do to Hagar? Remember back about chapter 16 or so? What did she do? She treated her so badly that what? She fled. She fled. And that's all the text says. It's not like on this occasion where she says to Abraham, get rid, send him out. All the text tells us before chapter 16 is that she was so harsh to her that she left. You bet that was harsh treatment. And then, of course, the angel of God appeared to her and everything, and she came back and with this with the name Ishmael and everything, and so they. But once she got back, you think that smoothed everything? Everything was just okay. Abraham was probably as happy as can be. But Sarah, not Sarah. And so now this comes along, and she sees Hagar's son mistreating her boy, and right away she goes to Abraham and says, they have to go. Not sharing, my son's not sharing his inheritance with that slave woman's son. And how does Abraham react to that? He's not happy about that at all. The thing was very displeasing to Abraham on account of his son. He loved Ishmael. But God said to Abraham, be not displeased because of the boy, because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you, for through Isaac shall your offspring be named. So you want to talk about the providence of God and all that. All of this is very important and even providential, because it was really important that these two separate. I mean, in those days, you know, the Old Testament life was rough. You know, they had law and things, as we've already talked about, but it wasn't like now. What do you think would have happened if Ishmael despised Isaac, and there's very little doubt that he did, and he loses his inheritance? When they get older, what do you think Ishmael's going to, what might he do to Isaac? Was that unusual in Old Testament times? No. And you know, once things change a little bit, they grow up a little bit, Isaac could be in trouble. Separating them was the right thing to do. So God says, you do as your wife has told you to do. And so that's how that transpired. And don't feel bad for Ishmael. As we read this, it says, so Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder along with the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered into the wilderness of Beersheba. And when the water and the skin was gone, she put the child under one of the bushes. And then she went and she sat down opposite him a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot. For she said, let me not look on the death of the child. And as she sat opposite him, she lifted up her voice and wept. This is kind of interesting. And God heard the voice of who? Right, of the boy. Doesn't say he heard her cries, but the voice of the boy. And the angel of the God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, what troubles you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Up, lift up the boy and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make him into a great nation. So Ishmael was going to become a great nation. And who would that be, obviously? Who are they called? The Arabs claim descent from Ishmael, but the Ishmaelites will be the great nation that came. If you go back to chapter 16, he 10 princes would come from Ishmael, which is already different than Isaac, because what would come from Isaac? 10 what? Or whatever. Didn't specify the number, but what would come from him? Huh? What'd you say? Oh, great nation. I can't understand what y'all are saying. They're getting too loud. The bell must have rung. But kings would come from him. And so princes would come from Ishmael, kings from Isaac. Little difference, isn't it? And as we close very quickly, just we'll move on from Ishmael. But it's interesting that he of course, would have these sons and everything. He'd have a daughter too. You know who his who could tell me who his daughter would marry? Anybody know? His daughter ends up marrying Esau. Who is that? Isaac's son. What about those family dynamics? We'll talk about that next week.